This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Vintage Homeschool Mom. Today I have Meredith Curtis on the line, and she is a special guest with me today, and also a special sponsor, which is Second Harvest Curriculum, and that's usedhomeschoolbooks.com, and we'll be talking about them in a minute. So today we are going to talk about homeschooling 101 in the elementary years. So Meredith, why don't you go ahead and get started by talking about literature?
Thank you so much, Felice. Well, literature is my thing. I love to read, and my oldest daughter fell in love with Jane Austen. She majored in literature in college and then went on to get an advanced degree, and she was a professor teaching freshman English. So that is a big thing in our family. We love good books. My mom was a librarian. There's so many things that are fun to read for children. And if you have elementary school kids, there is so much stuff out there. But I want to start with reading because a lot of times, you know, if you're like me, I used a phonics-based curriculum, and I taught my kids to read, and then they could read. And then people kind of stop there, and what's really important is after the children can sound out words and actually read and understand is to keep them reading. And I would say it would be worth your while, you know, especially if you have a big family, to invest in a lot of really easy books that younger kids can read, because it takes a lot of reading for children to become fluent readers. And my son loved this cul-de-sac mystery, their little Christian mystery series, and we've just bought the whole, he read them all. And then as he got to read a little better, he liked The Childhood of Famous Americans. We bought all that series. But they have so much out there that's for very, very young readers. A young reader should be able to whip out a book a day or a book every other day and just become up to a place where, you know, your child can read quickly, well, and understand what they're reading. So don't rush them to the next level if they're not a fluent reader. And I would encourage you, give your children time to read. So many times parents of, you know, 6 and 7 year olds are doing all this other stuff with their kids. But when my kids were 6 and 7, we did math and reading. And, you know, then we added writing sentences, but we did not focus on a lot of other things. And we spent a long time reading. I would read out loud to them. They would read out loud to me. They would read on their own. We really focused on getting strong in math and getting strong in reading. And once your children can read well and read fluently, I'm going to really encourage you to go back before 1960, because that is when the books were more wholesome. That's when you see more of a Christian worldview. That's when you see actually much higher level of writing, so that when you get back to the 1900s, to the 1890s, to the 1880s, you're going to find some adults can't read those children's books because they're just written at a more advanced level. And so if you're giving your children classic literature, they are going to be so far ahead of the game in their vocabulary, in their comprehension, in their reading level. And my children loved Louise Annette Alcott. They loved the Martha Finley's Elsie Dinsmore series. They love Howard Pyle and all his adventures. And I have on my website, joyfulandsuccessfulhomeschooling.com, a number of reading lists that you can download for free, and just at every level, early elementary, upper elementary, middle school.
They are amazing. Yeah, they are amazing. We did a podcast, actually, it's podcast 85 of must read, all-time favorite must read books with Meredith Curtis. So, and I have links there. So I'll put that podcast link. I'm writing myself a note, Meredith, or I'll forget. but I will put that podcast link here, and that will take you to Meredith's site, because she does have, like, amazing lists, and we also have some of these, the links on that podcast. So, yeah, really amazing.
I'm also going to encourage you, when it comes to literature, build a home library of good mm-hmm. books. And I spent more money on building a library than on curriculum. Every year from my homeschooling budget, more than 50% went to building a good homeschool library. And I'm not kidding. I got books cheap. I would go to used library sales. I would go to all kinds of places. But build that collection of good books and have a reading time every day. You know, even as the kids get older, they're doing harder stuff. Have a reading time every day where everything is quiet and everyone reads a book.
Right. You know, and that's exactly, we read so many books, and I think that was one of the reasons that I felt that my children spoke well, you know, their vocabulary was a little bit more advanced because of the reading. And even if I was sharing with you that some of my kids struggled a little bit with reading, but because we read so much, they still were immersed in good literature, and that was so great. So really, really important. And again, these, I have a lot of lists on. There's also podcast 84 on Vintage Homeschool Moms, which is the summer reading list, that are maybe a little bit more fun titles, whereas with school time, I like to keep it with academic titles and things like that. And usually, you know, in the elementary years as well, you know, you want to hit history. So why don't you share a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, history for children, focus on the story, focus on the people, focus on the events, rather than dull, meaningless drivel and even dates. My children memorize about 20 dates, and everything else kind of fits around that. They memorize, and then that's all the way through high school, and then they just are able to, like, have this rack and be able to place things in relation to those dates. And history is a story that God is writing. He started at creation, and there's the fall, there's the flood, and then it moves into the ancient history. And I think it's very important, as you're teaching children, you know, what happened in the world, to use the Bible and to teach them the Bible stories and the people and the men, and teach them about men who loved God and men who didn't love God. And there's no perfect person in history except for our Jesus, and he is the center of history, and all history points to him, all history points back to him. So that history, and from a Christian worldview, God created the world in 6 days, and of course that goes into science as well. But I think with history, with my children, I started with their history, their story, and I would, you know, show them their pictures of when they were born, and talk a lot about, you know, how they grew up and what things they did. And I would tell them, this is your history, and then mom has a history, and dad has a history, and tell them, you know, our story, and then your grandparents have a history, and tell them that story, and then they understand, okay, this is what history is. It has a beginning, it has a middle, and, you know, eventually, of course, we'll die and hopefully be with the Lord, and so it has an end, but our history has an end when Jesus comes back. So they begin, if they understand their personal history, your individual's history, it's a lot easier to say, okay, now here's America, and America has a beginning, and this is kind of how it all began. It has a middle, and this is how it progressed, and now here we are. And so that, I think, telling history as a story, focusing on people, having fun. I'm right now working on putting into print how to have a medieval banquet, how to have an archaeological dig, how to have a Passover Seder, how to have an Olympic Games, because those are all things that we did with our children that were really fun when we studied ancient history and Middle Ages. We did all those things. We did lots of hands-on stuff so that they got to dress up like they dressed up. They got to eat food they ate. They got to do activities that they did, like chess is a medieval game, and, you know, it's based on that whole idea of knights and kings and queens, and So, you know, when they play chess, we played chess when we're, you know, in school for learning about the Middle Ages, because that's it's a story. It's part of, you know, what happened. And it also, chess itself, the game, goes into so much that reveals about the Middle Ages. But so when you're thinking of teaching history, think of the fun, think of the story. And we always use lots of timelines and lots of maps, especially for big picture people. A timeline is really helpful to see, like, when things happened at the same time, the kind of the beginning of the section you're studying and the end. Timelines, a lot of times, when you look at a timeline, you realize, oh, wow, the same time that Columbus was, you know, exploring and these other people were exploring, there was, you know, there was the Reformation going on, and there was the Renaissance going on, and all of those things were happening at the same time. And so I think it's important for kids to have that kind of view. Maps are wonderful because, you know, a lot of kids want to know where, and learning about the culture. And lastly, when we study history, we always watched movies. We read all kinds of historical fiction to make everything about that time period come alive.
And that's great. And I'm looking at our website, which I love, that there's a search feature. So if you go to the ultimatehomeschoolradionetwork.com, and on the front, underneath the register to get your free bonuses box, there is a search feature. And I just searched for teaching history. And we did this like a year ago, no, 2 years ago. Yeah, 2016. You and I did teaching history. So, of course, I forgot that we did this podcast. And so we have not only an awesome broadcast, I'm sure it's awesome, I don't remember it, but I'm sure it is because we did it 2 years ago, but we also have a world history reading list, and I think these are compiled of your books and my books that I put together, so there are links to them, but it's September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May reading list. So these are reading lists that you can look at for teaching history throughout the year. So, you know, it's just, we've been podcasting a long time, so I forgot we even did that. But no, I'm excited about your upcoming book, Meredith. I think that is going to be awesome. And so we're going to take a break really quick and talk about our sponsor. Well, today I want to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Second Harvest Curriculum, and you can find them at usedhomeschoolbooks.com. Second Harvest is a curriculum company owned and operated by Lori Power, and Lori's a homeschool mom, actually a graduated homeschool mom. Her homeschool journey is over, but she is providing this amazing resource. So Second Harvest is a source for quality used homeschool books with over 40 publishers to choose from. So you can visit their website and see if the books that you are looking for are available. And one of the things I love about Second Harvest is that it comes with a 30-day return policy, and I think that's really important. You know, at Second Harvest, they also buy back gently used books. So if you have some books that are sitting around that want a good home, with either a homeschool family or Christian schools, you can find out if this is something that Lori wants to carry. And if you go to podcast 129 on Vintage Homeschool Moms, you will find information there with all of their social media links. It's the Homeschooling 101, the Elementary Years podcast. And you can find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. If you have any questions, visit them at usedhomeschoolbooks.com or talk to Lori on the phone at 308-350-0335. And I want to thank Second Harvest for being a sponsor of Vintage Homeschool Moms. We really appreciate that. All right, well, welcome back. This is Podcast 129, The Elementary Years, and I'm here with Meredith Curtis, who podcasts on Finish Well Podcast on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. She podcasts once a month with her group of amazing friends and people in her church, and her husband as well, Pastor Mike Curtis. So you'll want to check that out. And we've been talking about literature and history, and now we're going to delve into math. And math is something I do well, and I don't really like it, Meredith, but I can do it and I can teach it. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say about teaching math in the elementary years.
Well, thank you. Well, I did mention earlier that in the very, very early years of like 5, 6, 7, that our school consists of reading aloud and reading and teaching kids to read and then helping them read, and then math. And then later we add writing sentences, then teach them to write paragraphs, et cetera. But math is so foundational, and math is incremental. That means that you have to teach step one before you can teach step two, before you can teach step three, which is not the case for almost every other subject. You know, you can just mm-hmm. kind of learn what you want when. And math you do need to do every day. Math, like reading, kids need to read every day. They need to do math every day. The first, what you want to do when you're teaching math is children need to learn the concept. And we have used textbooks. We've used workbooks. I love when the early years to use workbooks. We used Bob Jones math because it was such a beautiful, beautiful workbook, and it was, you know, very Christ-centered, and you know, there were just so many good ones. But we used that one, and my friend Laura used Math BC, with it was very hands-on, and I highly recommend hands-on math because it's so much easier for children to be able to touch and feel and move and get the concept. But we just, you know, my kids, we sat down every day, we did the math, and I never said, oh, you don't have to do all those extra problems. And I know a lot of people do that because in my mind, I want my children to not only understand the concept, but to be able to do every problem flawlessly. And that takes just practice. It takes doing it over and over and over. And if you think of it like playing the piano, when you first play like you're first learning a piano piece, you know, you play it and you get all the notes right. Then the next time you go through and you're playing it, you know, you played it several times, you start making sure that you're getting louder and softer when it's appropriate. And then at the very end, you kind of begin to add little flourishes. But those little flourishes can't be added in the beginning. You have to keep practicing and practicing the piece. And that's kind of the way math is. Math, a lot of times people don't like math because it isn't something that, oh, yeah, I got it. You know, you kind of keep doing it, and the more you do it, the more you understand it. And so I would just really encourage you to make math the first thing in the morning after they have their quiet time, after they read the Bible, because their minds are fresh. It kind of gets all the neuron synapsing, and have them redo problems they get wrong and explain things to them. And, you know, kind of if someone is struggling with math, then get a tutor. I would, you know, they probably, in elementary, they don't need it. You can be their tutor.
Right.
But math is foundational for science. It's foundational for engineering. It's foundational for a lot of potential future careers. So let them get everything. If my child, you know, has a year where they're struggling with math, we have never hesitated to do the same year over in a different curriculum. And one of my children had to do fourth grade math over because she just wasn't getting it. A few years later, she was in an engineering competition and went all the way to state
wow.
as a winner in a math contest. So don't assume because children don't get math concepts that, you know, they're dumb or they're just not a math person. Just give it to them in a different package in a different way.
That's very good. And we did the same thing. We did repeat algebra for my one son and then elementary math for my other son because we were using a workbook that really didn't work with him. And we ended up going to Saxon, which back then didn't have workbooks. And so I had to write a lot of the things for him because he had a really hard, it took too long, you know, for him to transcribe it all from the hardback book. But it was nice for him because it helped that lessons were very short and they went over concepts every single day. So it really depends on what the book is that you're working with and your child, and looking at both of them You know, because sometimes don't we just buy what our friends say, or, hey, I heard it on the podcast on Vintage Homeschool Moms, you know, and it works for Meredith or Felice. But you have to really look and see what is going to work with your kids and, you know, just look for a company, too, with a good return policy. That always helps. So, but very good advice for the math. And I also used a lot of manipulatives as needed. You want to stay away from that as they get a little bit older. But I remember in the early elementary years when my son was struggling just with addition and subtraction, I took a sheet of paper and I wrote from 1 to 20 on it. We went out to Illinois. It was a beautiful day. And I set the sheets of paper in a row with one at the beginning all the way to 20. And I gave them their books, and I said to both the children, I said, you know, this is like 2 plus 5. And I don't want you counting on your fingers, but you can go stand on the number 2 and then count up 5. Or if it was, you know, 7 minus 3, you could stand on the 7 and go back 3. They absolutely loved that. And, you know, we had to do it for a while. And, of course, I had to get heavier stock paper because, you know, the paper was floating around and in the pool and whatever, you know, the hazards of homeschooling. But it just worked. And it was because I was so frustrated with looking at them counting on their fingers or having to use manipulatives. And, yes, we used the M&Ms and all kinds of different math and flashcards, and sometimes it just doesn't stick. And again, I go to the Lord many times and just say, help, you know, inspire me with an idea that will work for my kids. And that was a way it got them out of their seats. It made them, you know, physically count, and they were so excited and ran back to the table and did their work, and there was no complaining, and they had fun and couldn't wait to tell Dad. The other thing, you know, you talked about this a little bit in the first audio we did with the preschool and kindergarten 101, homeschooling 101, and that is your attitude and how our kids hear things. I remember just the teacher and me would always want to make sure that we got the information I taught them each day. So I remember saying, you know, take out a piece of paper and we're going to have a pop quiz. But I made it so exciting, like, guess what we're going to do today? Today we're going to have this pop quiz, and you're going to write 1 through 10, and I'm going to ask you questions, and you're going to write the answer. And they're, like, all excited. And so Daddy got home one day, and he's parking, you know, my husband's in construction. He had his big truck and big work trailer, and we live on this acreage, so he was, you know, backing up, and the kids were, you know, jumping up and down because they could see Dad way before, you know, he finally parked the trailer, and then they could run out once everything was parked. And he comes walking in, this big smile on his face, and I said, what's so funny? And he goes, he kind of grabbed me and gave me a hug and kind of whispered in my ear, pop quiz, really? They're excited about that? What are you telling my baby? We had a big laugh over that, you know, and so, you know, it is your attitude. If you're like, oh my gosh, we've got to take this test, and I, you know, I hate tests, and when I was a kid, I hated tests, and, you know, your kids are going to feel like that too, aren't they, Meredith?
Oh yeah, I think that it's all like in your attitude, and, you know, I just laugh because my son loves tests. He loves them. I never did tests with all my other kids. You know, even in high school, we really didn't do much tests. And he took a class, I guess an Apologia science class, and they had all these tests, and he just loved it. It really motivated him to study the material more. So he's like, Mom, you got to create tests for the economics test. You got to create. And I'm like, you're kidding me, you know. And so I think that not only is it how you communicate, but our children are all different, and different things motivate them
right
to learn.
I think it's great. Those are the competitive ones. Like, even my kids going out to fish in the pond is competition. And they were
mm-hmm.
playing basketball yesterday afternoon late, and they walked in, and they all had smiles on their faces. But, like, they bet things like, if you lose, you have to get me water. If I'm sitting there watching TV or having family night, and I'm just too tired to get up and get some water, you know, just like little things like that. So it has to be very, yeah, but they're just so, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's we're fishing in the pond or we're playing, you know, just a game of hoops in the front yard. It's so competitive. So, yeah, I totally get that. These last three are way different than the first two, and you have the older and the younger ones too. So that's why I think we get along. We totally get it. Okay, so we've covered literature, history, math, and now did you want to talk a little bit about English, or is that more with the writing? I'd like you to talk a little bit about that because both of us have an interest in that, and then I'll get into science.
Okay. Yes, I think for elementary school, I think what's really important for kids is to learn to write a sentence, to start with learning to write a sentence and explaining, you know, a noun, or you can call it a naming word and a verb, or you can call it an action word, and how it starts with a capital letter, it ends with the punctuation mark, and it has a complete thought. I find when I help college students with their writing, it all goes back to this basic ingredient of a sentence. And we spend a couple years on learning to write sentences. And in the beginning, like, I will basically be doing, being the one who comes up with the sentences. You know, we'll get out the whiteboard and, okay, let's make up a sentence about the cat, you know. And in the beginning, they don't get it. So you just say, okay, well, the cat jumped up on, you know, on the couch, you know, that's a sentence. And then they'll give you a sentence and it will be almost exactly like that. The cat jumped down from the couch. And so it starts out like that, but pretty soon they're coming up with their own sentences. And then you can learn to use, clear nouns, clear verbs. Like instead of saying the man, you know, went down the street, you can say, the fireman hustled down the street, or, you know what, you just make things right. More clear. And so we would play a lot of word games. We'd play games like Scattergories, games like Scrabble, things like that where they're working with words. Certain book series like Amelia Bedelia is good because it focuses so much on what she says, the words she uses, and there are certain authors that are very vivid in the way they describe things. And then another thing I had my children do would be copy for handwriting. I would have them either copy Bible verses or copy very well-written paragraphs from classic books, because as they were copying, you know, they were copying good writing, and I knew that would impact them for mm-hmm. their own writing. So from there we went to paragraphs, and we would be, the first kind of paragraphs they learned to write were description paragraphs, you know, like look at it, listen, touch, taste, you know, and smell, and then try to describe that so that someone who's not here, they don't know what you're talking about, they can understand what it is and experience it too. And then from there, narration, summary, all kinds of stuff. But I think it's worth it with little ones to spend a long time on sentences and really get that down, because that makes the paragraphs very easy to teach, and even like topic sentences and paragraphs flowing into each other. If they get that first button right, that, you know, the whole shirt kind of lines up, but if you don't get that first button buttoned right, you know, the shirt's all lopsided. So I think that's really true in writing. And then as far as creativity, I think children always want to come up with stories, and they can dictate to you, and you can write down their stories, and then later they can write their own stories down. And, you know, I think stories are really fun, but I really think that as far as actual school writing, we just kind of focus on sentences and then paragraphs, and they spent a long time, and then writing letters to people, and so writing, having an audience and a purpose and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's really good, and I know that my daughter, I used this for a few years, and Debbie Strayer was a really good friend of mine, and she's gone to be with the Lord now, but she wrote a series called Learning Language Art Through Literature, and Christina really likes that a lot for the elementary years and her children.
Yeah.
Because it incorporates language arts as well as writing, and I think that's great. And another shout-out for the book, Reach for the Stars, I published Susan Marlowe, and it's a workbook that kind of works you through kind of what you were saying in you know, like words that are really good to use, words that, you know, are more on the dead list. You know, I forget exactly what she terms it. And I also have a couple of handouts. I'll put links to that that are on the website from the book that just kind of gives you a little bit of a resource to use just in trading out some of those words. And, of course, you know, I love writing, and my kids write a lot because their mom writes. And I think we always want to instill these great assets with our children in homeschooling, and all we have to do is display them to our kids. Because what do they say about character? Character is caught, not taught. And,
right.
You know, a lot of what we do is mimic. So, yeah, that's great. So I want to get into science and some science fairs. So when they're really young, I know a lot of people just like to do nature science and they don't really like doing experiments. And what I tend to find when that happens is I will talk to high schoolers and they will always tell me they love history but they hate science. And a lot of that, I feel, comes from the fact that by the time they get to the experimentation, and again, that has to do with homeschool philosophy. We talked a little bit about it on the other podcast. You know, some people are, like the two biggest ones, I would say, are Classical and Charlotte Mason. And so those would be the big ones that people tend to use. And everything else kind of, you know, goes somewhere else or in the middle or you know, they're eclectic or there's a different philosophy. But those are the two biggest ones you hear a lot used in homeschool circles. And so, you know, they tend to use more nature studies, you know, reading books and that sort of thing and observing nature more so than doing experiments. Well, I began working with nature studies with my kids, but then going to experiments. And one of the reasons is because I had such hands-on learners and that this was something that they felt was really fun. And in my book, Teaching Science and Having Fun, one section of it talks about setting up labs. And I'm not going to go into all of that now, but I have a lot of information in there. And I would just have boxes set up of different types of science. So I would have like just a general science, a biology, a chemistry, a physics. And they could go to any of those little clear boxes, and they were cheap, and I found, you know, cheap stuff to put in it. But I was tired of my measuring cups being gone and my measuring spoons, you know, being down by the pond. So we ended up getting cheapy things that the kids could keep in their own set. And that's what they were doing for fun, Meredith, is they were, you know, experimenting and having a really good time doing it. And so that outgrowth and love of science, first of all, it helped my children with their vocabulary because science tends to use a larger vocabulary. The second is it really caused them to think outside of the box and to explore, and it wasn't cut and dry. It wasn't like, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. It's like, this is my hypothesis, and I'm going to try to figure out this problem. And that just, again, dovetailed into science fairs, and I have a small, successful science fair handbook. And, again, we'll put links to all of those books and Meredith's books and our sponsor's website in the post. But we started doing science fairs, and in the younger years, I feel like you, that you need to do it right. And not just say a volcano is a science fair project because it's not. It's a demonstration. And so, you know, you would see all these little volcanoes, you know, and they're really cute and it's baking soda and vinegar the kids put together. But I would rather see them do something with baking soda and vinegar and having it be more of a chemistry project. And my daughter actually did use something to that effect and made a stain remover out of it. Because she just wanted to blow up something. That was what she wanted to do as a little kid. This is my second oldest now, so I'm school mom. But, you know, and so she ended up winning science fairs because of the thought she put behind the project and having a good premise. So, again, you know, in the little elementary years, you don't want to get so bogged down on, you know, what is an abstract. But you do want to get a really good premise going and not just an activity that everybody's doing or something that's fun to do. I mean, if you're going to start basic, you could do something like you know, what kind of music makes plant grow, because they did that when I was in elementary school, and they're still doing it today. I see it because I judged science fairs some years back, and I was shocked that that was a high school project and they were still doing it, you know. but it really works, you know. It's really a cute project to do. But yeah, that's just in a nutshell. I know this is going over what we had allotted for time, Meredith, but you and I get so enthusiastic when we're talking about these things. And especially in the elementary years, you know, you want to get a good foundation because, like you said, it really sets the precedent for the other years, doesn't it?
Well, I completely agree with that, and I think, you know, that hands-on science experiments, nature studies, collections, all of those things, they make everything exciting. And learning should be fun. I mean, even when you're learning about engineering and you're learning about the chemical makeup of food, that can be exciting and fun if you've laid a foundation in elementary school. That learning is exciting and it matters.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on with me, Meredith. You are such a blessing in my life, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a privilege to be your friend and to be able to be on this broadcast. So have a wonderful day.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.